listening to The Warblers, a Birds Canada podcast. I'm Andrea Gress. Join me and others as we travel on common flight paths with our guests, gaining insight and inspiration from the world of birds and bird conservation in Canada. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Warblers. Wherever you are in the country, I hope you're starting to see signs of spring. Perhaps the red-winged blackbirds have started calling near you. As always, we welcome you to reach out and let us know what you're enjoying about the birds in your world. As we get closer to spring and summer, many of our volunteer programs are starting to ramp up. You might be excited to start nocturnal owl surveys, or perhaps the marsh monitoring program. That's a really cool opportunity to track not just birds, but also amphibians. Many of our species at risk programs will be looking for extra helpers soon too. Programs like Swiftwatch or the Piping Plover programs out in the Atlantic and Ontario. There's, you know, American Woodcock surveys, there's breeding bird atlases in a couple of provinces. Just endless opportunities to get out and get involved. Have a little look through the opportunities at birdscanada.org to just get brainstorming and get inspired. Now, if you've participated in any of those, or maybe you've been participating in Project Feeder Watch all winter, your data is feeding into this massive database. And we're exploring that topic today. Now, don't run away. Do not run away. This is a really, really interesting episode. And our guest, Catherine Jardine, has a way of bringing data to life. So if you've ever wondered about how citizen science projects that you're involved in are helping birds, this episode is going to be quite enlightening.
Welcome to the podcast, Catherine. So I got to start with, where in Canada are you based?
I'm at our BC office, so out here in British Columbia, just south of Vancouver, and not surprisingly, it is raining.
of course it is. So tell me a little bit about what you do for Birds Canada.
Well, I work in our data science and technology branch. So although I'm based in BC, I work on a lot of national and international programs because I work on our data. So data that's collected by staff and partners and citizen scientists across the country and outside of the country, too.
Certainly. And we're going to get into the data stuff, folks. Bear with us. It's actually a really, really cool topic. But first, you weren't always a data nerd. You started out doing more field research with birds and then transitioned to data science. So what made you swap your field gear for a computer?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. It's a question I ask myself sometimes too, because I loved being a field biologist. It was a fantastic time in my life. I was so lucky. I got to bounce around Canada working on different projects. I did some burrowing owl work in Saskatchewan. I got to, you know, hold Atlantic puffins in New Brunswick, and possibly my favorite was working up in the Canadian Arctic on Wimbrel. So it was a really fantastic experience. And every project I worked on was really unique. But one thing that they all had in common was that they were all collecting data. And, you know, I work under a Western science framework, and that's, we know, not the only way of knowing and seeing. But under that framework, the practice of science and conservation, it ultimately comes down, it all boils down to data. And so, like you said, maybe the idea of data management doesn't really fill everyone with enthusiasm and joy. and, you know, at that point in my life, it didn't really do that for me either. You know, when I was younger, when people asked me what I wanted to do when I grew up, I didn't answer, you know, I want to manage biological data. You know, I was a nerd, but I wasn't that big of a nerd, right?
Yeah.
But what I did know, both then and now, is that I wanted to help conserve wildlife and the environment. And as I was working on these different projects, I started to notice a few things. The people I was working with, they were doing great work, and they were wonderful, but they were understandably focused on their own studies, right? They'd use their data to answer their research question. And then that data might sit on a hard drive or in a filing cabinet, and I saw examples where it might slowly sort of fade away, and it wasn't available to be used for other purposes. So other researchers wouldn't even know it existed, right? The different projects that I was working on didn't necessarily know what other projects were collecting. It couldn't be combined. It couldn't answer those bigger questions, like bigger questions over space, bigger questions over time. The other thing that perhaps I'm not the first to complain about was that we spent a huge amount of time doing data entry. And Andrea, nobody likes data entry.
No, I've never enjoyed it either.
Right? Like, it's not a fun time. But it was the necessary step that had to happen, and you had to put a huge amount of time into it and cleaning and making sure your data was good before you could get into the cool stuff, right, the analysis. And the other thing that was happening around that time, and I won't tell you exactly what year because I don't want to age myself, but citizen science, community science, was really starting to take off. And that felt like a really huge and underutilized data source. And so there were just these little inefficiencies that I was noticing, and this potential of loss of this information that we were all working so hard and like suffering through so many mosquito bites to collect, right? And so it felt like we must prevent these inefficiencies. It feels kind of corporate, right? But I does feel like we have a responsibility to like the people who fund or donate to research and conservation and the species and the ecosystems themselves to try and use the resources we have. And if we're honest, like generally conservation resources are fairly limited, to try and use them as efficiently as possible. You know, we're facing the climate crisis, we're facing the biodiversity crisis, we don't have a lot of time. So trying to make the conservation process as efficient as possible, it sort of felt right to me. And, you know, I wasn't the only one, right? Lots of people were noticing these same things around the same time, because the software and hardware that existed, you know, were available to start addressing these issues. Mm-hmm. And there was a growing push around these inefficiencies in citizen science programs and open data platforms. And Birds Canada was part of that movement. And the team here was building Nature Counts, which was a platform designed to help address these things. And so it was exactly what I was looking for. I even remember, maybe I was a data nerd right from the beginning, but I remember my stomach doing a little leap when I saw this job posting, that it felt like the place where I could do the most good with my skill set, which is how I ended up transitioning from my gumboots over to databases.
For sure. Yeah, it's an interesting story. I think about myself, I've done a lot of the field research style work as well, boots on the ground, and then getting more into the communications side, because that's a really important thing that sometimes is undervalued in conservation as well, is just trying to get people amped up about all the work that's happening out there. That's really important.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, for you, you're a data nerd at the heart, right? So you took it a different direction. But I think we're both kind of pushing for the same sort of progress, so that I could so relate to your story.
Yeah, we all find our niche, hey?
We really do. We really do. Yeah. You just seek out what you love and you'll just find your way. So your way, ultimately, is this platform you're working on, which is Nature Counts. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. You can glean a little bit of it from the name, right? And I love me some wordplay. I'm not just a data nerd, I guess. I'm a nerd in a lot of different ways. But there's some double meaning around counts there, right? We're collecting data, we're counting nature, because we know that nature, the environment, biodiversity, it matters. It counts. It needs our awareness and protection. And the Nature Counts platform is trying to make that process as seamless as possible. So it's a lot of different things, but it's all centered around one big database. There's information flowing into that database from researchers and citizen scientists, and then there's data flowing out of that database. And that data goes to analysts and governments and consultants and schools and the general public and really anybody who is part of the conservation community. So at its core, it's data management, but really I see it as a bit more than that. It's facilitating that critical step towards making informed decisions and turning knowledge into action.
Okay, so Nature Counts is taking in a ton of data and making it so that we can kind of process that and analyze it. And it's, you know, spitting it back out for practical uses. That's going to be my real basic way of explaining it to myself. But how exactly is that working? Like what tools are there within Nature Counts that, like, you know, all comes together?
For sure. There's a bunch of different tools that exist to help with each of the steps in that process, right? So there's mobile app and a website. Those are used for collecting new data. So somebody's going out in the field and they see maybe a piping plover, they're going to enter that into the app or the website, and that data flows into NatureCounts. And then there are import tools to bring in historic data or data from other programs, right? We have the NatureCounts app, but if you enter data, say, into the eBird app, that data also flows into NatureCounts from one of our import tools. And all of that data now comes together and it's sitting in the NatureCounts database. And right now we're at about 230 million records in there right now. So it's big.
Yeah.
And it grows by 25 or 30 million a year. And that's sort of increasing, the rate of growth is increasing as well. So lots of data that's available. And we want to put that in the hands of people who will use it. So we have a download tool that lets anybody access those 230 million records. And then there's analytical tools to help statisticians use that data. And then you even can visualize summaries of the data online. So there's a map. You can just go there and look at those 230 million records in lots of different ways and interact with the data. And then exactly what you were talking about, taking data and make it into knowledge, right? Making it into meaningful information. So translating that raw data into some interpreted information for the conservation community. Like, for example, it might not be super meaningful to you to know that somebody counted, say, 3 evening grosbeaks at their bird feeder this year, right? You might be, oh yeah, evening grosbeaks are beautiful, interesting bird, cool that they were at your bird feeder. It's maybe more meaningful to know that evening grosbeak populations have declined by 83%. That's since 1970. So that individual record, it's interesting, but when you take that record, combine it with everybody else's records, and then run analysis on it, you get some of those meaningful outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, what NatureCounts is trying to do is be sort of that one-stop shop. So where people can go to provide us with information and then to access information, either raw data if they want to run their own analyses or apply the data to their own conservation projects, or interpreted results.
Yeah, and what I like about it is actually pretty user-friendly. You know, it seems like a big scary thing, but it's not. It's come a long way and it's a really impressive platform. So could you tell us a little bit more about like what kinds of programs are feeding data into NatureCounts? You mentioned, you know, like an individual spotting a bird at their feeder, but like what other kinds of programs are feeding into that massive database?
Well, how much time do you have?
Well, you know.
It's a pretty long list. Right now, there are over 900 different data sets feeding into NatureCounts, and that grows all the time. So really, any project that counts how many of a species are somewhere can incorporate their data into NatureCounts. So that's lots of large citizen science projects. Your listeners might, you know, really well, you know, like eBird, Christmas Bird Count, Project Feeder Watch, Breeding Bird Survey, any of the owl surveys, marsh monitoring. You know, this podcast would be very boring if I just listed programs. So there's those. And then there's also like more targeted research projects looking at specific areas or species that want to collect more detailed data. And we have data from other like taxa, non-birds, included as well, like the Monarch Knowledge Network. They track monarchs on their migration routes down to Mexico, and they're using NatureCounts to manage their data as well. So really, the thing we're trying to do for all projects is keep their data safe in the long term, so that it's there for anybody who wants to use it forever. And then really, we're trying to put it on a silver platter for anybody who will use it to move conservation forward.
Love that. And so are we just talking about data from kind of more recent projects, or is this also using historical bird and other records?
Well, I'm not picky. So Any data that's new that's being collected in real time can go into nature accounts, but also historic data sets. And those are really valuable, right? Because we can't go back in time. So historic data sets have a lot of power to act as baseline information, to know how things used to be and compare it to how things are now. So we actually have some records going back to the 1800s in nature counts. Project Nestwatch has some really, really old historic data. And of course, Christmas bird counts have been going for more than 100 years in North America. So we do have some of that historic data, though most of it is more recent.
Right on. And I would imagine that some of our listeners out there have contributed data to Nature Counts already through some of these programs.
Yeah, I'm sure they have. It's actually one of the reasons I was pretty excited to talk to you today, Andrea. A lot of times I'm, you know, over here in my databases, and none of what I get to do would happen without citizen scientists. And, you know, there's 25,000 people registered to Nature Counts, even more, tens of thousands to the other programs that feed their data into Nature Counts. So if you've done, you know, Project Feeder Watch or eBird or a Christmas bird count or dozens of different projects, your data, you know, has ultimately come into my hands. And it's cool to be able to have a chance to, you know, say hi and also say a big thank you to all of those individuals who have contributed to this project. And then, you know, be able to tell them a little bit about what we're doing with the really valuable information that they have so diligently collected.
Yeah, I hope that folks are really taking this in and appreciating that, you know, when they participate in something that seems small, you know, just watching the birds at your feeder and contributing that data, that's actually feeding into a huge, huge database and telling us so, so much. So your little actions of just being out birding and keeping track of what you're seeing, big, big impact coming out of that. So yeah, I want to say thanks.
Changed my life.
Yeah. Like, thank you to everybody who's been participating in those programs, big, small, whatever scale, for however long. It's a huge, huge deal. So I want to pivot maybe just a tidge and get into, you know, why this is such a big deal. Like, this is, we're talking about storing and maintaining a lot of data in one place, but it's bigger than just that, right?
It is. Maybe you'll forgive me the Lord of the Rings reference, but like Smaug was the villain, right? Like if I was just curled up on a little dragon horde of data, it wouldn't be that big of a deal, right? That's not the goal here. The reason why this big database is useful and important is that it is open data. So you send all this data to me and it does end up in my hands, but I'm just the middleman, right? Your records join hundreds of millions of other records, and our goal is to make that data findable and accessible so it flows into the hands of people who will use it.
Okay, wait. So in your analogy, you are a dragon sitting on a pile of treasure.
No, no, but I'm not.
Well,
I'm like outside of the...
You're sharing the treasure.
I'm flying over the village just throwing treasure at people.
Okay, and the data is the treasure. All right, I just wanted to visualize that through and through.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Well, and it's not a bad analogy, I suppose. Like, I guess in this case, the villagers are coming to the cave to get their gold. But like last year, we had 7,000 different data requests come to Nature Counts. So a lot of people coming. And these are all like researchers or consultants or conservation practitioners that are doing things with that information. Like they might be looking at, well, actually they are looking at the impact of climate change. Some are assessing the impact of a new proposed development, right? If they want to, you know, build a bridge in this location, instead of them having to get a sense from one field season of what species might be there, they can go to Nature Counts and see what records have been found in this location throughout, you know, history. And like, oh, okay, maybe there was a screech owl found in this location. And then they're going to have to really take that into consideration when they're doing this development review, right? We have people planning oil spill responses based on bird distributions from nature counts and, you know, deciding whether or not to list a species under the Species at Risk Act. You need data to be able to decide that. So all of those assessments come to nature counts and ask for the data that we have on these to make those decisions. You know, we have university professors, even high school and elementary school teachers using this data as part of their curriculum to teach people about birds. Even we have land conservancies, they're trying to decide where to purchase land. So they might know that they want to, you know, conserve wetlands, but where would be the best place for them to buy land to do the most for wetland birds? Or making plans for parks and protected areas. Like there's a huge list. I could go on and on. I'm like 7,000 different requests in a single year, and Nature Counts has been operating for almost 15 years now. So you know, there's lots of different ways that the data is used. And I think that the whole point is that we don't know all of those different ways that the data can be used. What we do know is that if we build it, they will come, right? So if it's easy to find, easy to get your hands on, and it all works together, then people will use it and people will keep reusing it for many different things.
Okay. Speaking of like easy to use, easy to find, there is a Nature Counts app, right? That volunteers can just tap right into.
Yeah, exactly. The Nature Counts app is something that I'm quite excited about because it's pretty flexible. So we're able to support like lots of different programs for their data collection needs. There's, you know, a few dozen that are collecting data from the Nature Counts app right now, but over time we're going to make it so anybody can create a project within the Nature Counts app and then collect any data that they need there. And so that lets us get all of the information that we might need to run an analysis. So sometimes you just need to know, okay, there were 3 evening grosbeaks at my feeder, but sometimes you might need to know some little bit more details about it to run more analysis, especially for species that are a bit rarer or harder to find, like owls or nightjars. Sometimes we need some extra information.
Right on. And how does Nature Counts differ from, like we've mentioned eBird a little bit? How is it different?
Yeah. So I love eBird, and I definitely do eBird myself. I keep my life list in eBird, and I want to keep doing so. So we didn't want to do anything that would like replace eBird, and the Nature Counts app definitely doesn't. What it's trying to do is collect the checklist data that eBird's interested in, and then sort of like checklist plus. So maybe I'm doing a project that wants to know, you know, am I collecting this data along a roadside or not? Maybe I need to know what the weather was like. Was the moon out? Because that has a big influence on nightjar activity, for example. So it lets us collect a checklist, but then also get a few extra pieces of information. And then the checklist data, the stuff that eBird stores and is interested in, just automatically goes straight to your eBird account. So I can bird through my Nature Counts account and still have all of my checklists synced to eBird. So that was really important. So we can get that extra data that we might need for some things, but still have all of our info in eBird as well.
Love that. That's so slick. And could you tell me how volunteers are able to see their data in action?
So I think that like every time you listen to this podcast, you're kind of hearing about your data in action.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So Nature Counts is just helping make conservation a little bit more efficient, removing barriers, right? So, you know, you've got your wonderful wake up call series about species at risk, and all of those species would have been assessed using this data. Right. So every species we talk about in Wake Up Call, you know, somebody probably came to Nature Counts and did a download of all of the records of that species to figure out where is it, how's it doing over time, all of that information that tells us whether it should be listed or not. You did an episode on KBAs, right? Key biodiversity areas.
Yeah.
Those are defined with the help of Nature Counts data. Nature Counts data is used to help figure out where good places for key biodiversity areas might be. So, you know, at the beginning, I sort of said that science and conservation can really boil down to the data. And so any bird conservation action is really driven by what the data tells us. And you can sort of learn a little bit from the data yourself. You can go to the Nature Counts website, and there you can play with maps or view summaries. It's, you know, I guess I've really revealed that I'm quite a nerd, but I think it's really neat, you know?
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, I'm often surprised by the insights you can gain just by looking at these data on a map. Not too long ago, I just pulled up the Eastern Bluebird map. I don't even think I was really interested in looking at Eastern Bluebird at the time. I think I was doing a presentation in the East and wanted an Eastern species. And I started typing in Eastern, and Eastern Bluebird was the first one that came up. But I plotted the trends of Eastern Bluebird on the map, and I looked and I was like, oh, Eastern Bluebird is getting more Eastern. Hmm. In the western part of the range, they're declining. But in the Maritimes, in the Eastern population, they're increasing. So they're all shifting out to the East. And you start to think, well, why is that happening? What's going on here? And so as soon as you start like drilling into the data and playing with it a little bit, it really has a lot of valuable insights. And the whole point of open data is that anybody can do that. Any of your listeners can go to naturecounts.ca and start exploring.
Start playing around with it. That's so exciting. I know there have been many advances to the Nature Counts platform recently. Are there anything new on the horizon that you're really excited about?
Oh, a lot of new things coming up. We've been lucky to get to big influxes of funding recently. So a lot of our dreams and our schemes are hopefully going to become reality over the next little while. I think that, you know, making the process easier for getting more external data sets into Nature Counts is part of that. One really big one that's we'll probably be back to talk to you about later this year, Andrea, is the state of Canada's birds. Tying the data directly into those interpretations. So there's going to be species accounts for every single bird that's ever found in Canada. It's 703 species at last count.
Awesome.
So if you want to learn about any given bird, this will be a place where you can go and get an expert interpreted assessment of that bird. So an expert will have looked at the data and made some interpretations, but then you can also look at the raw data yourself there. So that's going to be really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, making it so more folks can collect their data through the Nature Counts app. Really, my goal in life is to eliminate the horrors of data entry for people. So lots of really exciting stuff that we'll be working on over the coming years, and incorporating a lot more of those tools for the conservation community is the real goal. So we're talking to users and saying, okay, what do you need? What can we provide to you that will make your jobs easier now that we have all of this data all in one place?
So cool. Yeah, it's a really impressive platform already, and it's exciting to think about where it's going to go and what projects it's going to help feed into. Now, before we wrap up, I'm going to ask you a really mean question. You've been working with all of this data for so long, right at your fingertips. Do you have like a favorite bird stat that you could share with listeners?
That is a mean question. Mm-hmm. Don't ever ask me to pick a favorite.
Well, you know, if you change your mind in the future, I won't hold you to it, but.
Okay. I think that I love finding something where I could have noticed it, but I didn't. And I'll explain what I mean. You know, I pay attention to birds. I do. I'm a birder. I work for Birds Canada. I pay attention to birds. When I'm outside, I'm looking at birds. You know, I'm getting texts from all my friends that say, "What bird is this?" You know, mm-hmm. I'm that person. And so I consider myself fairly aware of the natural environment around me, and have been for quite some time. And, you know, I live in Vancouver, and I've lived in areas where that are quite urban for quite some time. So there's always crows around, right? Mm-hmm. The inquisitive, amazing crow, they capture your attention. They're not secretive. They're not shy, right? They're everywhere. And you'd think that if something changed with crow populations, I might notice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But back in the early 2000s, West Nile came into Canada. It was a virus, and it impacted corvids in particular. Crows are a type of corvid. And I didn't notice any change, you know, going about my life. I didn't notice any change to the crow populations. But if I look at the trends for crows, like if I look at the Christmas bird count trends for crows, for example, in 2003, 2004, 2005, there's this very noticeable dip. Their populations dropped. And it was just really interesting to me that you have to write things down. You have to count things. You have to analyze them to be able to see these sometimes, because I didn't notice. But the data was able to tell me that something happened there. And I just think that's really cool. And it helps fuel why I'm doing what I do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would think, especially with some of those common birds too, where we sort of take for granted, like, oh, there's a crow, they're around. But without actually taking, you know, kind of like censuses of them, without doing that, we wouldn't have seen population dips.
Mm-hmm. And that's why that baseline data is so important. And I don't know if you know what I mean by baseline data, but like monitoring things before something bad happens, so that we know, mm-hmm. you know, where the somewhat undisturbed population should be, what we would expect those populations to be at. And then if we do see a change, then we know that it's a decline, and we know that we, you know, have to determine the cause of that decline, and then we have to act.
Yeah. And I feel like we're getting to the point where we're acting. As you've said, we've got data from the 1800s in nature counts, and that's pairing up with data that people are collecting today as we speak. And that's starting to feed into some major changes and big projects around Canada. And that is pretty darn cool. So I think you can feel good about your transition away from the fieldwork and into the data realm. I think it's having a big impact.
Yeah, hopefully folks have enjoyed learning about it. You never know if people are going to see a podcast on data management. Maybe I'll skip this one. But if you made it to the end, thanks for nerding out with me on this question, because I think that it's the reason we're trying to collect information. Collecting information is not enough. You got to use it.
Right? You got to use it. And on that note, folks, you can head straight to naturecounts.ca to check it out, or you can download the app that Catherine has mentioned and get out there and start playing with it to get involved. Thank you so much for joining the podcast, Catherine.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Andrea.
The Warblers is a podcast of Birds Canada. Our goal is to bring you the information you need to discover, enjoy, and protect birds. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast with everyone you know. Birds Canada relies on the support of donors like you. Visit birdscanada.org/warblerspodcast to make a donation today. The Warblers is produced by Jody Allaire, Kate Dogleash, Chris Koo, and Andrea Gress, with music by Jose Mora and art by Alex Nickel. Until next time, keep birding.